wait in anticipation for these 10 days to come. And it's amazing that despite the fact that it cuts us and it makes us cry, but there's an anticipation there. There's a feeling there. You're waiting for this moment to come so that you can pour your heart out. You can reconnect again. On the one hand, you feel grief, but at the same time, you feel happiness as well. The question is asked, why is this? Why is it that on the one hand you're feeling grief, but again you're feeling happiness? Go and see today. Look across the world. Mothers are preparing their children tonight. So you come home from school, you find that mothers say to their kids, from now on, the next 10 days are going to be crucial. Black clothes are worn. The entire atmosphere of your house changes. Mosques are flooded. People begin to move. There's a movement now. You don't care anymore, day or night time. For the next 10 days, everything inside of you is pointing to one reality. And that's the reality of Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salam. As the time of the Dhuhr goes closer, and as we're moving closer to that Imam alayhi salam, this message holds true. And this is the only message that will make us survive these trials and tribulations which this nation is going through. Look and see for yourself. See how quickly time is accelerating. See how quickly pain and suffering is coming into our lives. One of the greatest secrets of these 10 nights isn't the fact that you come and shed tears only for Sayyidul Shuhada, because the Imam doesn't require our tears. The actual sirr, the secret of these nights, is that we use these nights to change our destiny. It is within these nights that you change your destiny. All of that pain that you brought here, every one of us has some pain within our heart. It's that pain that drives us. Each one of us are suffering because we're human beings. Allah gives us one opportunity, time and time again, and that opportunity is the wasilah of these 10 nights, that you can come here and that you can cry. Go back to the tradition of the fourth Imam alayhi salam and see. Beautiful as he says. He says, look, even if all of the problems of the world befall you, and you feel like crying, and those tears come into your eyes, and you know some problems that we have, either as family problems, or financial, or health, whatever it may be. Just make the intention that when you cry for my father, and so he's accepted in this way. Every movement, every tear, every pain that you feel, make that intention, and you see that your heart feels lighter again. That's what this night is about. This night is that night of preparation. This night is that night that we prepare ourselves, that we can make that difference in the next 10 nights. Leading on to the day of Ashura. All of your problems, everything lies here. Solution for everything lies here. And that's why each one of us needs to get on the ark of Sayyidul Shuhada alayhi salam. And so tonight starts off that process. Tonight we make a covenant. If you're here tonight, it's because you were invited. Not everyone comes to these centers. Not everyone comes to these majalis. If you're here, it's because you're the Dua of Zahra. That's why you're here. Look at yourself and see. Don't look at your status as something small. Look at your status and see that it's because of that mother who prayed for this nation. That's why you're here today. And that's what makes the difference. For those people who realize their status, you find that not only in this world, but in the hereafter, you were one. Beneficial for you. These are those nights. That's Sayyidul Shuhada that all of humanity remembers. And look and see. Has there been such a sacrifice like this? You know, I remember a number of years ago in the BBC, there was an entire documentary done that across the world who commemorates Sayyidul Shuhada. You find that fire within us is greater, but all religions somewhere or somehow commemorate Sayyidul Shuhada. For you, there's a connection, because the Imam alayhi salam, the 12th Imam says, he says, our Shia are those people who feel our pain when we're in pain, and we feel their pain when they're in pain. Don't ever think that you're alone. Don't ever think that you don't have anyone to support you. Every time you pain, your Imam pains as well. But it's that realization that needs to be there. And for every time the Imam pains, you pain. This is why you feel that harara, that fire within your heart, that the Imam alayhi salam has said, that the death of Sayyidul Shuhada will be like a fire in the hearts of the believers. They'll never die away. That's why you're here for today. That's what pushes you, that fire within your heart. But it's not just us that commemorate Sayyidul Shuhada. Go across the world and see. And that's what the BBC was saying in this documentary. They said, look, even if you go to Lebanon today, you find that there are Christians who commemorate Sayyidul Shuhada. Ask why, and they'll tell you that this Imam represents humanity. for everything that's within humanity is found within us, in this Imam. Why did the Imam go out and do what he did? You know and I know that the Imam was destined for heaven anyway. But the reason why he went there and the reason why he gave his life was for one thing, to prove to humanity that there's still humanity left. If Imam Hussein didn't stand up and rise, it would have meant that there was no humanity within society left. It takes a man like him to stand up and to sacrifice his life to show that within our fitra, the biggest thing which is there is love and sincerity. And that's what you see that man, that on the day of Ashura when he stands there, there is love and sincerity drenched and flowing within him. That when he raises his hands to Allah on the day of Ashura, everyone is gone and there's no one remaining. But he looks up towards his creator and he says, Allah, do you accept me now? Are you satisfied with me now after having lost everything with all the burden in his heart? And then he says, Allah, take until you are satisfied. That is a man of sincerity and that's a man of love. See, why is it that his name is alive today? Ponder over it, think about it. Great people have come and gone. You see, in the last 15 years or so, we've seen the likes of Mother Teresa come and go. If you were to ask anyone, who is Mother Teresa? She was a great woman. But how many people know the day that she passed away on? You know, go back to our native country, which is the United Kingdom. We had dying as she passed away, right? 2 million people came to her funeral. Today, if you ask half of those people, what day did she die? Nobody knows about that. They don't remember that. Within the fitra of man, you find that when it comes to pain, slowly but surely, as they say, either it kills you or it makes you stronger. A mechanism means that we cope and we survive. If I was to ask you, who's your great-grandfather, many of us wouldn't know. And even if you did know, what day did he die? Most of us wouldn't know. Why? Why is that? It's a process. And you find that pain slowly relieves itself over a period of time. For those people's parents who aren't here, those first years are critical, right? But 10, 15 years, it becomes stable then. The grief is there, the pain is there, but it becomes stable. But now look towards that pain of Sayyidul Shuhada. If I was to ask you, do you know how he looks like? No. Do you know how tall he was? No. Do you know what color eyes he had? No. Do you know what time he would sit down with his family? No. What is it that we know about him then? In the terms of physical features, we don't know anything about him other than what's written in the books. So what is it that attracts you towards him? Why is it that it burns your heart when it comes to his tragedy? That in itself is a miracle. Regardless of anything, 1400 years later, if he's commemorated from these pulpits, and if millions of people come to commemorate Sayyidul Shuhada, that means that it's a miracle. Because within our humanity and our fitra is dictated that we forget this type of pain. 1400 years later, if millions of people are coming, that means Hussein won and Yazid lost. See, that means that there is a system in place. That's the living miracle. That's the miracle of Sayyidul Shuhada. We don't know how he looked like, but we know his principles. Why is he timeless today? Why do tears come into your eyes when we mention his name? Timeless, because of Allah. One thing Imam had that none of us have in the same way as the Imam, and that was sincerity. The more sincere you are, the more timeless you become. You see, sincerity isn't something physical. We as human beings are consisted of two things, the physical body and the soul. The soul is immaterial. It lives on and it continues to live on. The sincerity of Sayyidul Shuhada is such that it's timeless. And every time that energy is felt, look at that energy, right? 3 weeks ago, I was on the Hajj. As we were going into Mina, when you heard people shouting, Labbaik Ya Hussein, it's like an energy that comes within you. The name of Sayyidul Shuhada today brings revolutions. When the Shia nation is oppressed, there is one thing that comes onto their lips, and that's Labbaik Ya Hussein. And if you look at that power that's generated, if you look at the passion that's generated, revolutions have been made within his name. Go into the 20th century and see some of the greatest revolutions, whether it was within Iran, whether it's within Lebanon, whether it was within Iraq, whether even within its Pakistan, even within those formative years in the 80s, if there were revolutions were made in the name of Sayyidul Shuhada. And today, if you look at us as well, you find that we will do anything within our power to preserve that. So go and ask those Christians of Lebanon, and they'll say the same thing in this documentary they said. They said one thing, Sayyidul Shuhada represents humanity. For everything that he did, it shows that there's humanity left. And they went then to Israel as well, and they interviewed Jews within Tel Aviv, and they asked them, this is what is it that drives you? Why is it that you cry? And this isn't our news. This is news which is found on the BBC. Iraqi Jews within Tel Aviv, they said, well, look, we're from Iraq. We've seen the miracles on the shrine of Sayyid al-Shuhada. How is it possible that we don't go towards him? I remember a couple of months back when the day came for Imam Musa al-Qadhim alayhi salam, commemoration, and they were Iraqi. And there were Iraqi Jews who said that we commemorate this because we were from that region. We understand the status of the Imams. You see, the Imams are timeless. We've restricted them only to Islam. But the benefits of the Imam goes through all of cultures. But you know what the interesting thing was? Is when they went to India and they asked the Brahmins. There's a special caste amongst the Brahmins. You know, there's four castes, right, within India. One of them is the Brahmins. There's a branch of the Brahmins known as the Husseini Brahmins. And they were asked, why do you commemorate Sayyid al-Shuhada? I remember 10 years ago, within London itself, that there used to be Hindus and Sikhs who would come to South London and North London, and they would beat their chests, and they would cry for Sayyid al-Shuhada. And you ask them, why is that? And they'd give you the story. According to their traditions, in the same way that we have our riwayat, they have their riwayat. According to their riwayat, you find that there was a king in India, and that king had a wife. His wife and Imam Hussein's wife were sisters. And therefore they say that Imam Zain al-Abidin is actually our nephew. Says that the king of Persia had a number of sisters. One of them was married to Sayyid al-Shuhada. One of them was married, for example, to Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Says one of them was married to Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. For example, says one of them was married to our king. And it says that Imam Zain, and according to them, not according to us, says Imam Zain al-Abidin writes a letter. And he says that I'm stranded amongst these people, and these people are willing to overcome us. Come and help us. He says that we were those Brahmins who went from India by the time we came to Karbala, we'd realized that Sayyid al-Shuhada had been killed. You Muslims killed him. We Hindus stood up for him. This is why every year, year in, year out, we come for the commemoration of Sayyid al-Shuhada. And that's why my mind goes to a particular story that takes place in 2007. I remember a friend of mine, he was in India at the time, in a city known as Lucknow. And most of you know where that city is, right? He says that in Lucknow, he says that there were 17,000 Hindus who came for the procession of Sayyid al-Shuhada. He says within that procession, says there was a man. And the man was from the warrior caste. Four castes, right? Brahmins, the priest caste, second caste is the warrior caste. You know what he says? He says that we've heard from our ancestors that whoever comes under the flag of Abul Fadl and whatever they ask for comes true. This man goes under the flag. And living examples are there, right? Story comes into mind, and as it comes into my mind, I'll tell you, and then I'll move back onto the story. You know the country Pakistan, right? Pakistan itself was founded by Muhammad Ali Jinnah. And you know him because he was a Khoja from Bombay. So Pakistan was founded by a Khoja from Bombay. Now Muhammad Ali Jinnah's great-grandmother was a Hindu, right? And she converted later on, she became Ismaili, and then after that she became Ithnashiri. Story goes like this. Says that his grandmother had 11 sons. 11 of them died. And if you go to the biographies, you'll see this. 11 sons died. Says the final son lived though. Why? Because within our aqidah was that if you go to the horse, which is the Dhuljana, and you know within the Indo-Pak culture, they have a horse that they take out on the day of Ashura. So she went onto the horse and she grabbed it. She says that you represent the horse of Sayyid al-Shuhada. She grabs it and she says, for the sake of Sayyid al-Shuhada, give me a son and I'll name him after you. 9 months later, Allah gave her a son. She named him Dhuljana. He had a son. He named him Muhammad Ali Dhuljana, but it was too heavy, so he became Muhammad Ali Jinnah. Look at that, the power of Sayyid al-Shuhada. And that's not something which is hidden. That's something which is history. So in this way, 2007, this man comes. Hindu, grabs onto the flag of Abul Fadl and he says, look, I've heard from my ancestors, regardless of the fact that whether we're Hindu or not, we don't need to be Muslims because we know that you're for everyone. Grabs on and he says, oh Abbas, give me a son. And now he gets emotional. You know, sometimes we get emotional. He says, Abbas, give me a son. If you give me a son, I'll bury you in his way. I'll sacrifice you in his way. And he said it and he left. 9 months later, Allah gave him a son. This is within our generation, not 1,000 years ago or 200 years ago. Within our generation, 6 years ago, Allah gave him a son. You know what he says? He says, that night when Allah gave me a son, I realized why he gave me a son. But I also realized my promise that I'd made to Abul Fadl. says, fine. What should I do? He says, but after 10 years, Allah's given me a son. He says, no, but I'm from the warrior caste. A man is known by the promises that he makes. He says, fine. I made a promise. I'm going to fulfill that promise. He says, you lifted up the child, and at dead of night, without his mother knowing, he leaves the house. And as he leaves the house, he goes out towards the outskirts of the city where there was a desert. And he goes there, child in his hand, comes close, takes a shovel, starts digging with his own hands. And he digs, and he removes, and he makes a small grave. And tears are in his eyes, and his heart is bursting. And he's thinking to himself, after all of these years, but he said, look, I remember that I made a promise, and I'm going to fulfill that promise. He takes the baby, he puts him into the ground, he takes the dirt, and slowly he begins to chuck the dirt on the face of the baby. And the baby's suckling, and the baby is moving, and you can see the love the baby has for his father. Natural love. Heavy-hearted, he somehow buries the baby. And as he buries him, he begins to walk. And when he begins to walk, he says, I'd heard that Sayyidul Shuhada walked 7 times from the tent. He says that as I was going to the door of the house, I stopped and I walked to the front of the street again. And again I walked, and again I walked, and again I walked. He says, there was one thing in my mind. What am I going to say to the child's mother? He says, eventually I picked up the heart. I opened the door and I went inside. And as I went inside, I saw the mother was sitting there with a child in her hand. So I looked at the mother and I said, you disgraced me, woman. She says, why? What did I do? She said, you followed me. She says, no, I didn't. I didn't even know. She says, how'd you have the child? You know what she says? She says, half an hour after you left, there was a knock on the door. When I opened the door, there was a very tall man standing there. The tall man looks at me, he opens up his shawl, and he gives me the baby, and he says, tell your husband, what we give, we don't take back. That's Sayyidul Shuhada. That's Abul Fadl al-Abbas. These are what those nights are about. Why have you come here, essentially? Because each one of us has something in our mind that we want them to fulfill. If a Hindu can take, why is it that we don't have the power to take? Look and see. Look at the Jew who goes to the shrine of Imam Hussein. Whatever he asks for comes true. Look at the Christian or the Maronite who goes to Imam Musa al-Qadim, asks for his eyesight, he gets his eyesight back. Why is it today then we as the followers of the Imam don't have that aqidah within us that we can take whatever we want? You see, some things aren't rational. Some things you can't even philosophize on. When you deeply go into philosophy in the same way as the likes of Plato did, or if you go before that Pythagoras, or if you go after that Plotinus, or if you look at some of the Islamic philosophers, if they came to a conclusion that there is a reality far beyond the human intellect, and that reality is based upon love, that is emotion. Why is Sayyidul Shuhada alive today? Because he moves your emotion, and because of the fact that he's the king of hearts. No one's forced you to come here. No one's taken a sword and they put it to you. If this room is full today, it's because of one reason, and that reason is because he's moved your hearts and he shakes your hearts. That's what makes the difference. Go and see today, who remembers Namrud? Who remembers Fir'aun? How many people come for Yazid? Banu Umayyah, 83 years of tyranny, but today who remembers them? But despite the fact that if you look in the time of Mutawakkil, you see that people were willing to chop their hands and feet off for Sayyidul Shuhada. In a tradition it says a woman comes in the time of Mutawakkil. She comes in front of one of the soldiers and she says to him, she says, son, I want to go into Ziyarah of Hussein. The soldier replies, he says, look, auntie, you're old now. Who's going to help you? Why do you want to go for? Don't you know that you have to chop your right hand off? You know what she says? She says, I'm willing to do that. He takes out a sword. She puts out her left hand. He says, don't you know? Right hand. She says, son, I don't have a right hand anymore. Last year when I came, they chopped off my right hand. Now I'm going for my left hand. That's the power of Sayyidul Shuhada. Do you know how many of our ancestors, how many of the followers of the Imam have given their arms, their feet, their children, their lives, their property for one thing? Go and look at the tradition of the Imam. In the time of the sixth Imam, alayhisalam, if you look at his tradition, Hajj, right? There are certain shara'it and shurut. If your life is in danger, if you don't have the money, not this, if that, if the other, you don't need to go. Imam says, sets the precedence. He says, even if your life is in danger, still go to the ziyarah of my judge, Sayyid al-Shuhada. There was a time in the time of the seventh Imam where he made it obligatory even. There have been times in the times of the Imams when if you look at it and you find it's difficult to go. Their life is in danger. Their children are being killed. There's an oppression which is taking place. But the Imam alayhi salam says, you must go. This is the one institution that you must keep alive. Go back and see into history and you see the eighth Imam alayhi salam. A day comes, the day of Ashura. He undoes his top, takes off his imamah, takes off his shoes. Barefooted, he begins to walk on the streets of Medina. Somebody comes to him and they said, Mala, how long are you going to do this? How long are you going to continue to walk like this? How long are you going to continue to cry like this? You know what the eighth Imam alayhi salam replies? He says one thing though, and look at the hikmah within this. He says, my Shia, the reason why I do this is because I don't want you to forget this institution in the same way as you forgot Ghadir. Had you remembered Ghadir, today this institution would still be there. In fact, there's another statement that's made within history. Had you guys remembered the death of Zahra, today we wouldn't be in the state that we are today. You forgot all of these things. So today we're going to make sure that you don't forget this institution, which is the institution of Sayyid al-Shuhada. That's what makes the difference. Today people look at this and they think, there are only two camps left now. There was a very famous Sunni, right? Sunni alim in the 20th century, very famous. Shah Ahmad Nurani. Shah Ahmad Nurani was asked. Somebody came to him and they said to him, are you Shia or are you Sunni? Now to ask one of the greatest scholars of Ahl Sunnah that word, are you Shia or Sunni? But you know the reply that he gave was groundbreaking. He looks up at the person and he smiles. He says, my friend, after Karbala, there are only two parties. Either you're with Yazid or you're with Hussein. I have the pleasure of saying that I'm with Hussein alayhi salam. That's the difference. Look, we're able to give everything and anything. If I was to ask you, what can you give for Sayyid al-Shuhada? You'd be able to give it. I can say truly that even if you yourself doubt yourself, I don't doubt you. Because we've seen within the last couple of years. You know, go back a couple of years ago. Remember on the day of Ashura, right? Opening up the news. What happened? There was a bomb blast in Peshawar, right? And I remember seeing this. The bomb blast in Peshawar. Now if you analyze that video, and it's on YouTube, you'll see this as well. There was a flag. The flag of Abul Fadl. They were holding that. You know who's holding that? 21-year-old kid, right? You know when a bomb explodes, what's the first thing that happens? What's the first thing you want to do? You want to run away from the scene. If there's a terror attack, you want to run. You know what happens? The bomb blasts. People take steps forward, then they come back again. And all you heard was, Labbaik Ya Hussein. What pushes a person to do that? See, the child, the two young youth, they started talking to each other. One says to the other one, he says that when my mother was sending me, she says one thing. She says, son, make sure you've been given the responsibility of this flag. Make sure this flag doesn't go down. In the bomb blast within Karachi, and it always happens, seems to happen in Pakistan year in, year out. But again, it happened, you could see in the news. The child's body was blown, but he was holding it in such a way that the flag didn't go down. See, it's almost that your life is in there. Now you tell me, can you do that? I believe you can do that. If you couldn't do that, you wouldn't be here today. What are you people then? Understand your status. You understand where you need to go to. In the next 10 nights, there's a lot to discuss about. We're going to look at the 12th Imam. We're going to look at the signs which are taking place at the moment. We're going to look at the economic crisis. We're going to look at the mysticism of the Imam. We're going to look at how to prepare. There's a long journey from Karbala to Imam Mahdi. That's where we're moving in this direction. And this is why it's important for me to give this introduction. But understand your status. You are the du'as of Zahra. How? Why? What? Who is the Sayyid al-Shuhada? Look in the tradition and see. It says that when Imam Hussein, right, was coming into this world, 6 months, after 6 months he came into this world. It says that birth and carrying Hussein was very painful for Zahra. She felt a lot of pain. And you see in the tradition, you understand why. She used to cry at night time. Somebody asked, they said, what'd you cry at night time for? She says, what can I do? At night time, this child converses to me. And when he converses to me, he says, Ya Ummi, أنا غريب. Says my mother, I'm غريب. I feel lonely. I feel as if I have no one. I feel no one recognizes me. Says أنا مظلوم. Says I'm oppressed. أنا وحيد. I'm alone. أنا عطشان. I'm thirsty. Says the child talks to me, and he tells me that he's thirsty, and he tells me that he's oppressed, and he tells me there's no one there for him. You know what the tradition says? She goes crying to her father. She says, Father, tell me, why does my child do this? Father, heavy-hearted, replies, says, Jibreel just came to me. And he told me, your son will be massacred on the plains of Karbala. You know what she says? She says, then, Father, I don't want my son to come into this world if this is going to happen. He says, but no, Zahra, remember, through the blood of your son, he will give life to this nation. He will revive this nation. His blood will be so powerful that revolutions will be formed on this blood. And go and see. Don't you see revolutions forming on this blood? Don't you see that when our brothers and when our communities are in pain, the minute the word of Hussein comes in, you find that we stand up again. That's that power. But it doesn't stop there. Imam comes into this world. If you want to know the status of this Imam, look at the tradition which is mentioned in the our brothers, the Ahl Sunnah's books. And this is a tradition found in the Sunni narration, not within our traditions. It is within our tradition, but not within this way. It says, one day Umm Salama was sitting with the Prophet. And the Prophet of God said to her, he says, look, I'm feeling tired. He says, I'm feeling tired. I'm going to go into my room. I'm going to close the door. Remember one thing, Umm Salama. Make sure nobody disturbs me. Make sure nobody comes in. I'm going into my room. Make sure nobody disturbs me. She says, fine. The Prophet of God goes into that room. A person comes. She says, look, the Prophet is resting. And in this way, time goes by. It says a three-year-old boy begins to crawl. And from crawling, he stands up on his feet and he begins to walk towards the door of the Prophet of God. As he goes, Umm Salama comes running. And she says, son, your grandfather has said he doesn't want anyone to disturb him. Now what does that three-year-old child do? Tears come into his eyes. Heavy-hearted, he turns and he starts to walk. And as he walks, the door opens. Prophet of God comes running out. He says, Umm Salama, why did you turn my Hussein away like that for? Umm Salama replies, says, look, Ya Rasulullah, didn't you say nobody could come? He says, no, that's not nobody. That's the one who's going to save my religion. He goes to Hussein. Hussein has tears in his eyes. Rasulullah can't take the tears of Hussein. He grabs him. He cuddles him. He takes him into his arms. He hugs him. In the tradition, it says he puts him on his chest and he begins to cry. Jibreel comes. He says, Ya Rasulullah, don't you know what's going to happen to your son? He's going to be massacred on the plains of Karbala. Now imagine that. Ahlul Bayt know this. In another tradition, it says. Can you hear this tradition? This one breaks my heart. You know why it breaks my heart? Look at it the way that it goes. So Sayyidul Shuhada comes in. Zahra standing there. Wahi has just come down. Jibreel has said, your son will be killed. Zahra looks up. She looks towards Sayyidul Shuhada. She says, if you're going to present your life, with tears in her eyes, she looks towards her father then and she says, Father, tell me, are you going to be there to cry over my son? Mother's heart, right? First thing that goes into her heart, is there going to be anyone to cry over my son? Rasulullah says, no, I'm not going to be there to cry over your son. She looks towards Abul Hassan. She says, Ya Abul Hassan, tell me, will you cry over our son? Are you going to be there? He says, no, I'm not going to be there. Looks towards Imam Hassan. Says, are you going to be there? He says, no. At that moment, she says, Father, am I going to be there? He says, no. He says, who's going to cry over my son then? When there's no one to cry over him. Who's going to beat their chest over my son? Where there's no one to beat their chest over him. Who's going to remember our son? Rasulullah replies, says, Allah will create a nation who will cry for your son until the day of judgment. Now understand your status. You are that dua. You are the dua of Rasulullah when he says, Allah will create that nation. You're that nation. You're that nation they were looking towards. Whoever you are, however you are, look back and see, Sheikh Abbas al-Qummi has a tradition. In that tradition it says, if a person recites anything for the sake of Sayyidul Shuhada, if 40 people cry, Jannah becomes obligatory. He says, no, not 40, 30. He says, no, not 30, 20. He says, even if a couplet, and he continues to go and he says, even if one person has a tear in their eyes, Jannah becomes wajib upon them. The criteria is this though, arif and bihaqqih, that they understand the status of what Sayyidul Shuhada is. That's for us. That's that power that we've been given. Understand therefore, as I come back to this again, understand your status. Know who you are. Know what you are. Sacrifices that have been made, they've been made so that we are alive today. The most difficult moment for Sayyidul Shuhada was what? Imagine him standing there as a child, right? When Rasulullah says to him, son, what are you willing to give? Are you willing to sacrifice your life for the sake of this message? He says, yes. Grandfather, I'm willing to sacrifice my life. Are you willing to sacrifice the life of your brother? Yes, grandfather, I'm willing to sacrifice. Are you willing to sacrifice the arms of Abbas? Yes, grandfather, I'm willing to sacrifice that. Are you willing to sacrifice the chest of your son? Yes, I'm willing to sacrifice that. What about the neck of your son? Yes, I'm willing to sacrifice that. There's one place, though, that history says that comes, even Sayyidul Shuhada stops. You know what that place is? When he turns around and he says, that are you willing to sacrifice the hijab of your sister Zainab? And at that moment you find that Imam goes quiet. He says, in my lifetime or after my lifetime? He says, after my lifetime. He says, then I'm willing to accept. Hussein is that person who couldn't take his sister like that. What is the biggest test? If Hussein sacrificed everything for us that we are here today, the biggest test for him was his sister. Let me ask you a question. What's happening to his sister's shrine today? Is there anyone to help her? When Imam is standing there and he's saying, "Hal min nasin yansurana," that is for all of the Ahlul Bayt. If the shrine of Sayyida Zainab today is being bombed, and she is there alone, where are the sons of Zainab to stand up and say that we are with you? You see, that's why we're here today. Get into that mind frame tonight, because we have a long journey to go, a very long journey. Where are we today? What have we done for her? That woman who sacrificed all of her children, there was no one even to call her mother. That mother is asking, where are my sons today to protect me when these people, these barbarians are bombing my shrine? What are we doing today? Where's the awareness today? Let's get into that right state of mind tonight. Let's change our naseeb tonight. If you have problems tonight, these are those 10 nights that you can change them. By the dawn, Allah says, wal fajr wal ayal ashr. By these 10 nights, you find within Tafsir Qummi, it says that when Allah talks about these 10 nights, He talks about the 10 nights of Muharram. They say a person comes to the 6th Imam, alayhi salam, they ask him, say, Mala, tell us, it has been in my naseeb. I know that this will happen. I know that I can't change it. It's my destiny. Now the Imam replies, he says, may sar no one thing. Dua changes your destiny. This is the institution of Sayyidul Shuhada. When those tears come, as Imam says, Amir al-Mu'mineen says, the only one thing you have in front of Allah is your tears. When those tears come into your eyes, and when you raise your hands, then see how quickly Allah accepts it. This is why we recite musibah as well. Yes, it breaks our heart. But in that our ulama said, ask for people, raise your hands, whatever problems you have tonight. Yes, we have du'as for everything. For example, if a person is born blind, you go into Surah Yasin, there's a verse that if he was to recite it, his eyesight comes back. For example, you're having financial problems. You go to Surah Talaq, there's a verse that you recite it X amount of times. You become wealthy. For example, if you have cancer, there is an entire nuskha from the 6th Imam that I've seen with my own eyes, 12 people have been cured by that. So there's everything within the Quran, and there's all the du'as there. But the biggest du'a are those tears that you shed for Sayyidul Shuhada. That's what these nights are about. Inshallah, tomorrow we'll see, as we begin to move towards the 12th Imam, how these tears become effective, how these tears become powerful. But know it's teamwork. In the same way when you go, and this is the final point, and this is what I want to conclude on. It is our responsibility to spread this message of humanity. Imam is for everyone. If you go to the army of Imam Hussein, what do you see? You see people from all over the world there. You see ethnic Christians there. You see ethnic Jews there. You see Africans there. You see East Europeans there. In the army, in those 72 men of Sayyid al-Shuhada, you see a lot of diversity within that. Imam is saying, therefore, that my movement is for everyone, not just for one person. If you look at the Imam, how many people does he call, right? Few people. You know who one of them is? As he's walking, a Christian lady is standing and she's thirsty. The Imam comes forward to that Christian lady and he says, "Lady, are you thirsty?" She says, "Yes." Imam says, "Okay, let me do something." He hits the ground and water comes out of that. But he says one strange thing. He says, "Go and tell your son that me, Hussein, is waiting for you." Look at the Imam. He doesn't say to a Muslim, he says to a Christian. Because the message of the Imam is timeless. He's the Hujjah of Allah on everyone. So this message needs to be taken to the Western world. When your ancestors went to East Africa, within a generation, the Africans knew about Sayyid al-Shuhada. When your ancestors went to India, everyone knew about Sayyid al-Shuhada. When your ancestors went to Lebanon, the Christians such as George Yordak began to commemorate Sayyid al-Shuhada. Somebody asked George Yordak, right? They said, "You write so much about Amir al-Mu'mineen, why don't you become a Shia?" You know what he replies? He says, "I don't need to become a Muslim or a Shia, I'm an Alawi. I'm a follower of the principles of Amir al-Mu'mineen." That's timeless. When your ancestors went to Iraq, the Jews of Iraq began to commemorate. So why is it then in the 21st century, 50 years us Muslims have been in the West, and when you go outside, the average person doesn't know about Sayyid al-Shuhada? The reason being is that we've not done that work that our ancestors have done. We have left the Imam only to the four walls of our Husseiniyah. Had we taken the Imam out, the world would have known about it and there would have been a revolution in the world in the same way as you find revolutions again. Why? Because Imam is the Imam of the heart. He changes the heart. When tears come, that's an emotion. No one's forcing you to cry. If you go and see Hindus, I've seen Sikhs crying for Sayyid al-Shuhada. It moves their heart. Don't you think if you took that message? That message in the last 4 years has gone out only because of these youth who have put billboards up. And I remember in London, you know, I was coming back. I got out of the train. I was walking out and I see a billboard there. And there's a picture of Gandhi. So I thought to myself, you know, this must be some advert for something. So the Hare Krishnas are doing really well nowadays. They've got really nice billboards. And just like me, 50 other idiots stopped to read what it was. And what was it? A message of Sayyid al-Shuhada. Believe me, when I spoke to those guys, they said within a week, we've had 100,000 inquiries. Innovative. That's what it is, right? You guys have the tools. Two kids did that, by the way. They were 21, 22. They took their student loans and their pocket money to put those billboards up. But look at the reward that came out of that. You guys are professionals. You have the brains. You have everything, right? You have people from all walks of life. Why can't we stand up and market Sayyid al-Shuhada in the way that these two kids did? If today we're making those billboards and drink water and remember Imam Hussein, it's because of kids. It was their idea. We have enough people here to have a think tank to spread this message, whether it's within universities, and this should be a topic within itself, how we can do tabligh of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the greatest asset we have. You know, I remember 2 weeks ago sitting with a lady from Arkhan University, right? She was doing a research project about tashayyu within the UK. She came to one conclusion. She said, "Your nation is alive because within your religion there's a religion." I said, "What is that?" She says, "Husseini." Says, "That's your religion. Your religion is Sayyid al-Shuhada." And so therefore one other thing, then I said to her, I said, "Look, let me tell you something. In the 1950s, when communism was spreading within Asia, it was spreading within the Middle East, Azerbaijan, Georgia, parts of Iraq, you know, the Bakri brothers, they were all coming towards this line of socialism and communism, right? You go to Iran. Iran was the only country which remained the way that it did. So somebody asked the Communist Party, Hizb ut-Tahrir, they said, "Why is it that you can't infiltrate Iranian society?" They said, "Look, we have infiltrated Iranian society. But there's one problem that comes. When we're about to convert them 100%, right? For some reason, the moon appears and the first of Muharram comes. From the first to the 10th, they become from red to black again." It says that there's something about this Hussein that even when we try and convert them, they come back again. It's in the words of that famous poet, right? Within India, there was a guy by the name of Josh Malyabadi. If you look at his history, you'll find. You know what he says? He was an atheist for about 10, 15 years. Somebody asked him. They said to him, why is it, right, that you've become a Shia and a Muslim? He was a Sunni before and he later on became an atheist. He says, why have you become a Muslim and a Shia? You know what he replied? He said that, look, I haven't sat down and studied about whether God exists or not. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care if God exists. He says, but I know God exists for one reason. He says, after 15 years, I sat down and I pondered over one fact. I said, if Hussein can sacrifice everything for a God, surely there must be a God. Why? Because that's what Hussein symbolizes. That's what Hussein means to us. You know, you find many atheists who still remember the institution of Hussein. But ask Hussein, what is it that hurts you? What is it that breaks your heart? Let's look at what breaks Hussein's heart. If you're remembering Sayyid al-Shuhada, tonight remember his family and remember his daughter. We've looked at Sayyidah Zainab. Now let's look at his daughter. When those tears come into your eyes, know that those tears are inspired. Who knows which tear will be caught by Zahra? See, when tears come into our eyes, that mother raises her hands and she lifts her hands and she prays for us. And she says, Allah, remove their problems and accept them. 4-year-old daughter. If you look towards the tradition of the Ahlul Bayt, it's their daughters who are the backbones. In a tradition you find, Khadija passes away, Rasulullah is heavy-hearted. 3 or 4 days later, Rasulullah goes to Taif. As he's coming back from Taif, he's covered from head to toe in blood. One thing is going on in his heart. I'm going home. I have a yatima waiting there. She's only 4 or 5 years old. She's just lost her mother. What am I going to say to her when she sees me bloody head to toe? What am I going to say to her? In the tradition, it says, as the Prophet of God goes towards his door, that small girl is waiting on the door, waiting for her father. But she doesn't cry. She doesn't say anything. She walks towards her father. She hugs her father. She removes the tears from the eyes of her father. And she begins her small hands removing the blood away from the face of her father. In the same way, Sayyida Zainab is also 6 years old. Her mother has passed away. Amir al-Mu'mineen is coming back home. Amir al-Mu'mineen is heavy-hearted. He knows what happened to Zahra. As Amir al-Mu'mineen comes in the house, Zainab is waiting there. Zainab goes to her father. Zainab makes sure her father is okay. In the same way, go now to Sayyid al-Shuhada. There is a 4-year-old girl there. That everything for Sayyid al-Shuhada is within that girl. Mukhtar asks Shimmer. He says, Shimmer, what did you do on the night of the 10th? You know what Shimmer replies? He says, all of the tents were burning and all of the women had been looted. He says that there was a small girl though, 4 years old, she was walking. And as she was walking, I saw she had earrings on. When I looked at her earrings, I thought, those earrings are going to look very nice on my daughter. And as I went towards her, I grabbed her by the ears and I ripped her earrings in such a way that blood began to flow from her ears. You know what she says? She looked towards me with an innocent face, with tears in her eyes. She says, man, if you'd have asked me, I would have taken them off and given them to you. Why did you have to rip my earrings off like that? It doesn't stop there though. If you want to see the pain of Sayyid al-Shuhada, look at this pain. You know what that pain is? The pain is Sham. Look at Sham. Sham is burning today. Look at that tradition and see. Those people have been to the Ziyarah of Ruqayya, right? When you go then you recite the Ziyarah. At the back there's a tradition. You know what that tradition states? The tradition states this. It says when Sakina died, when Sakina left this world, women came forward and they said, we don't want to give this child ghusl and kafan. Sayyidah Zainab said, why is that? Says, because there's mold growing on the body of this child. It is green and blue and red. You know what Sayyidah Zainab replies? With tears in her eyes. She says, that's not mold. That's Shimmer when he would beat her and slap her and hit her. Her body would go from green to blue to red. They say that Sakina was sitting in a cell and she was crying. And as she cried, the voice of Sakina reached Yazid. Yazid wakes up. And Yazid says to one of his courtiers, he says, who's crying? The courtier looks at Yazid, says, Yazid, tell me, who cries in Sham? Says, the Ahlul Bayt are crying. Says, what do they want? Says, they want their father. Sakina wants her father. Says, does he want her father? Says, take the cut head and give it to Sakina. In the tradition, it says Sakina was lying there and she was sleeping. Or in fact, her eyes closed for a second. When her eyes opened, she ran to Sayyidah Zainab, and she grabbed Sayyidah Zainab, and she begins to cry. She says, "Aunt, when I was sleeping, I saw my father come to me in the dream. He was saying, 'Sakina, come to me.' My father grabbed me. He removed the tears from my eyes. He removed the blood from my ears. He put his hand on my head. He began to rub his hand on my head. He says, 'Sakina, come to me.'" You know what Sayyidah Zainab replies? She says, "Sakina, you are truthful and your father is truthful. I believe what you're saying. But the next time you see your father, tell him, why doesn't he come to Zainab as well just once?" You know what they say? They bought the head. The person bringing the head was a Shia. He says he grabs the head with all of respect. He brings the head of Sayyidul Shuhada. As he brings it, Imam Zain al-Abidin looks up at him and he says, "Man, if you didn't know how to carry the head of my father, why didn't you ask me? I would have carried it." You know what the man replies? He says, "Mala, I tried my best to carry it." He says, "Man, don't you know, when a hair would break on the head of my father, my grandmother wouldn't sleep for 3 days. She wouldn't eat for 3 days." He says, "That's how painful it is. If you couldn't carry it, I would have carried it." Says Imam Zain al-Abidin takes that head. He takes the head and he gives it to Sakina. Now go and look at the maqtal and see what it says. It says that when Sakina took this head, you know what she says? She says, "Father, look at Naseeb. Yesterday I used to sleep on your chest. Today you're sleeping on my chest, father." Says he grabs the, she grabs the head. You know what she does? She puts her hand under the beard of Sayyidul Shuhada. She says, "Father, why don't you open your eyes, father?" And there's a couplet that she recites. She says, "My mazloom father, my ghareeb father, why don't you open your eyes and see? Let me ask you, father, what happened to those earrings that you gave me on the day of Eid, father? You know where those earrings have gone." She says, "Father, why don't you open your eyes and say?" There's one more thing she says. She says, Father, tell me, who made me yateem, father?" Finally, she says, "Father, why don't you open your eyes and just tell me, have you ever seen a girl of 4-year-old whose hair has gone white, whose body has been burnt, whose eye is bruised?" You know what she says? She says, "Father, forgive me that when I talk to you, I stutter, because on the night of Ashura, when Shimr slapped me on the head, says from that moment when I fell on the ground, I couldn't talk properly after that. Every time I speak now, I speak with a stutter." Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. For the sake of Sakina, for the sake of the broken ribs, the broken bones, for the stutter of Sakina, may Allah accept all of your du'as tonight. For all those people who are suffering tonight, whatever problem that they're having, whether it's financial, whether it's health problems, for those people who don't have children, for the sake of Ali Asghar, may Allah cure all of those problems of yours. May Allah accept our worship. Wherever they're followers of the Ahlul Bayt, especially within these 10 nights, in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, in Pakistan, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Iran, wherever they may be in the Western world, may Allah protect your lives, your property, and your respect. May Allah hasten to the hur of the Imam and make us all part of his Ansar. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahireen. Matime Hussain.